Should pregnant women over the age of 35 have amniocentesis to check for birth defects and chromosomal abnormalities such as Down syndrome? In an opinion paper published in the Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology of Canada, the Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists of Canada recommends that maternal age should only factor into a decision about amniocentesis when a woman is over 40. I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Philip Wyatt, Head of Genetics at York Central Hospital in Toronto. Good afternoon.
Oh, thank you, Barry.
What is amniocentesis, its clinical indications for use, and how are the results interpreted when it is performed?
Well, amniocentesis is basically a technique where a small needle is passed into the woman's abdomen and we draw off a small amount of amniotic fluid, and then the needle's removed. It's very similar to having a blood test, except we're doing it in the abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
The fluid that we take off can be used to look for a number of very different conditions, but generally amniocentesis is used to look for a category disease called chromosomal disease. Basically, we all have in our cells 46 chromosomes, and when we elect to have children, we take from the mother and the father 23 chromosomes. They meet again, and they're 46 there again in most pregnancies that are being formed. On occasion, however, this process doesn't go as well as it should, and the wrong amount of chromosomes turn up, 46, 47, whatever the number may be, and we now can look for this fairly accurately and reliably. Amniocentesis has been around for really 30 or 40 years, and it's a very well-established technique. But over the number of years, other things have happened that have made the safety of this become mm-hmm. even more reliable. Ultrasounds become better. We can do some tests to see how stable the pregnancy is. So there are a lot of reasons why amniocentesis no longer is needed in the same fashion it was 10 or 15 years ago.
Which turns to the question of why age 35 as sort of the initial lower end cutoff age for performing amniocentesis. What was the thinking behind it, and how, as you've mentioned, with technological changes that sort of impacted on that, but why does it still continue today? What is it that encourages the age of 35 being that magic number?
When those numbers were picked, and actually different numbers were picked in different countries around the world, 35, 36, 40. They were picked when really the only information we had to establish the risk present in a pregnancy was how old the mother is. We know that chromosomal problems become more common the older you are. There are a lot of reasons for that, but it's just an established fact. But when we were collecting all this information, the only information we could get was basically the age of the mother. You then looked at the risk of a problem occurring, and the risk and safety of amniocentesis, and it was felt the balance point was age 35. What's happened in the last 10, 15, 20 years, other means of looking at how healthy the pregnancy might be have occurred. And we can now do ultrasounds on pregnancies. We can measure some of the chemicals that the baby excretes into the mother's blood. And we now have more accurate way of looking at risk. And the decisions we made now that we have better technology is that instead of saying automatically the first test in Canada that a woman should consider is amniocentesis when she's over 35, we're trying to say, no, first thing you should do is perhaps consider having ultrasound done in the pregnancy, have your physician perhaps do some blood testing, and once we get the results of those back, we can give you better indication about whether amniocentesis is a test you probably should consider or not consider.
Is this approach done as a standard across the country?
In the last years or two, the argument has been, well, how do we change the standard? And that's why the Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists of Canada have come up with positions paper saying the first thing really we want to start happening is that before women go immediately for an amniocentesis, their clinical history is looked at, the consideration of blood tests are done, and ultrasound, so that we're in the transition point where we're trying to make sure all women are available, that there are now other things that they can consider before they first make a decision about mm-hmm. amniocentesis. Is it a national standard? It's very difficult to, in Canada and many other jurisdictions, to say what the standard is, but I think we're seeing the standard shifting over the next 12 months or so, so that most women will be encouraged to have an ultrasound in the pregnancy, consider blood tests being done on themselves when they're at either 12 weeks or 16 weeks along the pregnancy and look at that information before they make a decision about amniocentesis.
Now, what were some of the factors that led to your group to look into whether, as you mentioned, there is evidence to actually support the practice of offering the amniocentesis as a first step? And with respect to a study that was out last year in the United States that said that the risk of miscarriage as a result of amniocentesis, I believe, was 1 in 1,600. And I think your group looked at this and said, well, wait a minute, let's look a little bit further and see what the data really shows.
Right. Well, what was going on at the time was a series, actually, of international groups looking at this, the United States, the United Kingdom, France, and Canada. And one of the papers that was published in the latter part of 2006 came out of the United States and suggested that perhaps amniocentesis was much safer than we initially felt. And the figure that had been quoted in Canada was the procedure may be associated with the risk of causing a pregnancy loss of approximately 1 in 200 or 1 in 300. Publication in the United States came out and the figure quoted was approximately 1 in 1600. And a number of people looked at how the data was collected and said, no, this study's actually been badly designed to look at this risk, and the figure being used is an underestimate. As a result, we felt that the society felt it was very important that it be looked at again, and we did, and really feel that, as the paper just published says, that the first thing that should be done is that when a woman's considering amniocentesis, she should discuss this with her physician. Her physician should take into consideration her ultrasound results, her clinical history, and do an evaluation. And at that point, we felt that women should still be offered the option of amniocentesis, and we feel the risk of the procedure is more like a 1 in 300 risk than this 1 in 1600 risk, and really feel that women should be fully informed before they undertake any sort of risk. So we certainly do not support the publication suggesting the risk is about 1 in 1600, and a lot of other experts now have published the same sort of number, saying, no, it's not 1 in 600, 1600. It's probably in this range of 1 in 200, 1 in 300, 1 in 400.
And I guess this is an important number, not just as a means of a statistical risk, but there are times when, for example, the blood screening evaluations that are done, the IPS that's done, that'll tell you your risk of having a Down syndrome child is 1 in 300 or 1 in 350. Well, if you look at that risk and you compare that to the risk of doing the amniocentesis, it makes you think for a bit because they're equivalent risk in terms of deleterious effect on the pregnancy.
And that's why we felt it was important to try to get out as accurate information as we felt was possible so that women who do elect to look at how their pregnancy is going and elect for the blood test, either the first trimester screening or the modified integrated used in Ontario or the ultrasounds, and when they get these numbers back, can balance that against what their obstetrician or family doctor feels the risk of the procedure is and make a much better and much more informed decision. So that the very good thing about this is that the society is trying to promote that women should, with their provider, make very informed decisions. The negative, of course, is that all this takes more time and resource, and we're all stretched. But I think the most important principle is that we're trying to make sure that women are able to make very informed decisions about what they should do for their pregnancy.
Now, for a woman who's listening in, who's 40 years old and is considering conceiving or has conceived and is pregnant, does the same methodology apply? That is, does age really matter at this point, given the advances that have been made available to physicians and their patients in assessing the risks in their pregnancy?
Well, that was addressed again by the society in the early part of 2007, and we looked at all the information and basically advised women that before they consider amniocentesis, they really should look at these other things aside from their age. Now, the society published a report on that and basically came to the conclusion is that women who are under the age of 40 are best served not going straight to amniocentesis, but looking at the ultrasound and the blood test and the evaluation by their physician. Women above the age of 40 still remain in a relatively high-risk situation compared to the rest of the population but should consider these screening options first, and may find that their number comes back quite reduced. The majority don't, because having your children when you're over the age of 40 is in a higher risk situation, but certainly avail yourself of the ultrasound, your physician's opinion, and the blood test.
Now, this is, does the society have a website for the general public if they want to get more information about this and to have a really good review, as you've encapsulated so well today, on the approach when you're pregnant, of the options available, and what to ask their physician in terms of forwarding that discussion about the best course of treatment for them during their pregnancy?
The guidelines are available to the general public as abstracts on the society's webpage. You can go in many places in the internet and actually get copies of them. But the two pages that are available for the public to review just by going on the internet are fairly good for women who are interested in having this discussed and are perhaps concerned their physician might not be aware of this, print them off and take it in. The full publication can be obtained actually going to any of the internet sources that provide access to full publications.
Well, Dr. White, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to discuss the approach to pregnancy in an older woman and the changes in the treatments in terms of approaching determining risk and risk of genetic abnormalities or chromosomal abnormalities. And I think it really gives women a good opportunity to understand that 35 doesn't mean that things can go wrong. It's simply not the age, but rather taking into account a whole host of other factors and making that assessment and taking it from there.
Well, thanks very much. I enjoyed it.
All the best.
Right.
Dr. Philip White is head of genetics at York General Hospital in Toronto. Coming up, two studies, one on acupuncture, another on magnets and treating pain. Which one actually provides some relief based on the scientific evidence? We'll talk about that in just a few moments. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call.